So what we're going to do is we're going to look at some scientists have discovered missing links, and we're going to see whether they're fact or faked. And you guys got to guess. Maybe they're not in your textbooks, but some of those were in my textbooks when I was in school. So you'll have to guess. We'll see how smart you guys are. So let's go ahead and look at first one here. Okay, so the peppered moth. Have you guys ever heard of this one?
Yeah.
Has it been in your textbooks?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what the peppered moth was. In the 1950s, a British physician named Bernard Kettlewell performed a series of experiments. And the idea was is that he would see how industrialized pollution would change the color of moths and whether they would get eaten more or less. So what he did is he released captive moths during the day onto a nearby tree, and then he would look through binoculars to see how the birds would eat the moths, depending on how the pollution was. So if the dark moths were in a place where it was heavily, you know, had a lot of pollution, maybe they would be eaten less than the lighter birds, and moths, and the lighter moths in a place that was less pollution, the darker moths would be eaten more. And then in the evening, he recaptured the moths, and then he counted to see what happened. And what he said is this shows natural selection in action. Because the darker moths were camouflaged in the more industrial polluted areas, and the lighter moths were more camouflaged in the less polluted areas. So, next slide. Peppered moth, fact or faked? What do you think?
It's fact.
Fact? What do you guys think? Yeah, they push it a lot, don't they? Yeah.
They still talk about the peppered moth?
Yeah.
Okay. They still do? Okay. So it's still in your...
When I was in school, and they did when you were in school. But
is it so the pepper moth is still in your textbooks?
Yes.
As okay, being cool. Being proof of natural selection?
You just weren't listening that day.
Okay. So fact or faked, right? You guys say it's fact. I'll take... DJ said it's fact. It's faked.
What?
And you'll see why it's faked. So this was in the 50s, right?
Uh-huh.
In the 1980s, 30 years later, researchers actually went ahead and independently took pepper moths, and they checked them out, and they said, hey, pepper moths don't rest on tree trunks. So that's issue number one. Remember, they were on tree trunks. Also, moths normally fly when? When do you see moths?
At night.
At night. And if they're at night, what do you think their natural predator is? Is it birds or is it something else? What?
Bats.
So again, see the issue starting to come up? Also, like I said, they don't land on the tree trunk in the dawn. What they'll do is the moths will hide underneath the canopy of the tree, like under the branches, the leaves. They don't land on the trunk of the tree, okay? Yet, in 40 years of field work of people studying the peppered moth, only one peppered moth was found resting on a tree trunk. One. Because they're moths. They hide under the canopy. Yeah, so there's some issues already coming up. And also they found out that Kettlewell actually nailed dead moths to the tree trunk for the birds to feed on. And like I said, bats are their natural predator. But even though we see all these inconsistencies and these problems with this experiment that was supposed to prove natural selection, scientists still clung to this experiment as an example of natural selection. It is still in textbooks, it sounds like, today.
Was he trying to prove natural selection?
Yes, when he did this. He was trying to prove
the idea that natural selection was true, and then made it up.
And he made it up to make it. Basically, he did the experiment to get the result he wanted. But really what we're looking at here is really scientific fraud, are we not, with what he did? I mean, it's scientific fraud because of all the issues we just looked at, the peppered moth. So the peppered moth is faked. How about the next one? There's all peppered moth. Go to the next slide. One more back, please. That's all right. Glued, because the fact of evolution needs help now and then. I like that one. But he actually nailed them to the tree trunk. Okay, how about the next slide? Piltdown Man. You guys ever heard of Piltdown Man? Do they teach that in textbooks? I didn't have it in my textbooks because maybe there's a reason why. You'll find out. It's a place. So Piltdown Man was found in Sussex, England in 1912 by Charles Dawson. And it was considered to be the second most important fossil proving the evolution of man. It was supposed to be the, like part of the missing link. So out of those bone fragments there, which was a jawbone, part of a jawbone and some skull fragments, they came up with that artist rendition of what he looked like from those bones. Okay. So, next slide. Piltdown Man, fact or faked? What do you guys think? Faked?
Well, I remember.
It's faked. Yeah, Piltdown Man was fake. So what they found out was that Charles Dawson, he was a wannabe archaeologist, and this wasn't the first time that he actually, you know, said that he found things and he actually planted them on the site that they were digging. But what the thing that's really about this one that's really, I guess, disgraceful is that this is probably one of the most famous hoaxes when it comes to that. And the reason is because the attention that was paid to the issue of evolution and the length of time it took, the elapsed time from the discovery of those bones to the full exposure of the forgery. What they found out was the skull fragments were found to be of modern age. What Charles Dawson did is he chemically stained the bones to give the appearance of age, and he actually filed down the teeth. But he had some other ones too. He found like Roman artifacts along the wall there in England, and they turned out to be fakes too. Yeah, the other thing that was really good about Piltdown Man was that there was national pride in that, because England now was on the map of finding the missing link. So there was that scientific national pride for Great Britain. Hey, we have this missing link and it's in Britain. So the scientists, the elite scientists at that time really, you know, took the Charles Dawson's find here, his hoax, because they wanted to be on the map as England has a missing link. And it turned out to be a hoax. But it took 40 years for them to expose that it was actually a hoax.
And they found it in what year? Or so-called?
1912.
So it wasn't until 1950?
In the early 50s before they finally started really studying it and found out that he had chemically, you know, stained the bones and filed the teeth. Because it was just a modern human. Next slide. Nebraska Man. Have you guys ever heard of this one in your textbooks? That's what they say Nebraska Man looked like that. Okay, maybe not. This one was in when I was in school.
They talk about missing links, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, the thing is they haven't never. Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
The problem, right?
That's the problem.
These are the cases that they say. Oh, this is
the example. Yeah. So like Nebraska Man here, they found in 1922 in Nebraska, they found a tooth. A tooth. And they found a tooth, and they said that this thing looked like that from a tooth. They said it had a stooped body covered with hair, had a primitive face that kind of looked like the appearance of an ape, and scientists wrote volumes about Nebraska Man's physical and mental capabilities from a tooth. One tooth in Nebraska in 1922. I know. So, is it fact or fake? It's faked. Okay, you guys are getting on to this. Yeah, Nebraska Man was faked. Further work on the site in 1925 revealed that the tooth was incorrectly identified. I know. In especially in Nebraska. I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe in California, but Nebraska, no. So. But yeah, Nebraska Man was faked.
That's crazy.
They found other parts of a skeleton by this, and what they found out was that this tooth belong neither to a man nor an ape, but was a fossil of an extinct pig.
A pig?
In fact, it was retracted in the journal Science in 1927 as being a missing link.
And they found it when?
1922, 5 years later.
Yeah,
remember they wrote, remember scientists wrote volumes of how this social structure was for Nebraska man and how they used tools and all volumes, and here it ended up being a pig tooth. So you got to go, oops. Okay. All right, how about next one? Java man, not coffee. This is not coffee man, it's Java man.
Is it Java like the computer program?
Yes. Java Man was discovered by Eugene Dubois in 1891 in East Java, Indonesia. That's why he's called Java Man. He found a skull cap, three teeth, and a femur. And Java Man at that time was trumpeted around the world as indisputable proof of human evolution. It was the missing link. Textbooks, magazines were filled with all these reconstructing of Java Man. So from a skull fragment, some teeth, and a femur, they said Java Man looked like that. Mm-hmm. So, fact or fake? Yeah, he looks like pretty nice. What do you guys think? Fact or fake?
With this track record,
he wrote Java code, by the way, right? Right, Isaac? Okay, fact or faked? What do you guys think? Fact or fake? Okay, so it is faked. No, it's not. So I'm giving you a hint. So Java Man was faked. The femur turned out to be from a modern man and was found 50 feet from the skull cap. The scientist eventually renounced Java Man and claimed it was merely a fossil of a giant ape-like creature. Oops. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
It was some big ape. Yeah. But they made that whole clay thing to make what he looked like and all that stuff. Okay, next one. I think it's Orsay Man. Orsay Man. It was found in the Spanish town of Orsay in 1982 and hailed as the oldest fossilized human remains ever found in Europe. Scientists said the skull belonged to a 17-year-old man who lived 900,000 to 1.6 million years ago. And they even, again, had very detailed drawings done to represent what he would have looked like, which is up there. What they think a male, female, person would have looked like. 900,000 to 1.6 million years ago, this person lived. Fact or faked? So go ahead, what do you think, Eileen? Fact or fake? It's faked. Here's what they found out. You're gonna love this one. You thought the other one was good with the pig tooth. This one's really good. 1 year later, scientists admitted the skull was not human. Okay, wait for it. But probably came from a 4-month-old donkey. I'm not kidding you. Oops. A 4-month-old donkey. But it was indisputable proof of the missing link between man and apes. Turned out to be a 4-month-old donkey skull cap. The problem with the scientific community, if you ever watched Expelled by Ben Stein, which I recommend you guys watch, the scientific community is so entrenched in evolution that they see what they want to see in things. You know, they won't take any kind of a different opinion about it, or even like creationists. They really shut down creationists because, you know, they're so staunch in their beliefs. And so that's why all these things kind of come out later as being fake. Now, how about the next one? Let's do the next one. How about Neanderthal? You guys heard about them, right? Aren't they supposed to be like knuckle dragging and stooped and, you know, all that kind of stuff?
No. I say this is a fact.
You say it's a fact?
Yes.
So they're not dumb, they're not knuckle dragging and all that kind of ape like.
Knuckle dragging, I am arguing about because okay. I have actually learned this.
So you say it's a fact?
Yes.
Okay, let's see if it is. Fact or fake?
Yes!
It is, yep.
Yes.
There actually were Neanderthals. There actually were Neanderthals.
The one thing that I actually paid attention to in biology.
Good for you. Good for you. So evidence now, because they found quite a bit of, Neanderthal remains in you know where they lived and things like that, and they're now suggesting the scientific community that Neanderthals were basically modern man, but they had some issues, and one of the issues was is they suffered from rickets. You guys know what rickets are? Have you ever heard of rickets? Rickets is a vitamin D deficiency, and when you don't. Vitamin D, vitamin K, and calcium is what helps make your bones, and vitamin A a little bit there. But when you have vitamin D deficiency, even in the early 1900s, there were kids that had rickets, and their bones would be all kind of curved, and they would be kind of all kind of deformed looking, some of them, because without vitamin D, you can't really, I know with Steve, you can't produce your bones right, or it doesn't, your bones just don't grow right. So they're thinking now that they might have had some kind of a vitamin D deficiency, either due to a genetic thing or because most Neanderthals are found in Northern Europe, which we know there's no sun in Northern Europe, right? It's usually rainy most of the time. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's why. Because it was in the early 1900s. You have pictures of kids. Yeah, they were rickets. Yeah. So what they found out with Neanderthals, they're not stupid, they're not brutish, they're not just like knuckle dragon stuff. They found out that they are skilled hunters, they actually had a religion, and they were even skilled surgeons. They actually found a remains of one skeleton whose arm had been amputated above the elbow.
So they're saying a Neanderthal man was actually modern man.
It was modern man, but there could have been something going on with like a vitamin D thing. Yeah, or something like that.
You guys understand like the basic problem with the missing?
Yeah, remember God said that animals will produce after their own kind, right, Steve? Yeah. We will produce after our own kind. So
if they were alive today and they got together with a human like you guys could have had kids.
Right.
They were genetically human.
Right. And kind of a side topic here, the native population of Tasmania was actually wiped out by genocide because people thought that they were subhuman. And the thing is, just like what Steve's bringing up here, there were people intermarrying with the Tasmanian people. And God said, things are going to reproduce after their own kind. So they were just as human as we are. But because of evolution, people thought that they were lesser humans. This is like in the 1800s, around in those areas, they thought that they were lesser humans, kind of like the Aborigines, they thought. So they actually committed genocide and wiped out the whole people of Tasmania because of that. Because they thought that they were, and just another side note real quick here, did you know Adolf Hitler was in the evolution too? He believed in that because he wanted to create the master race. He was hoping, to create that Aryan race. And he killed anybody else that was considered an undesirable or somebody that would, corrupt what he was trying to do to create the master race.
Of course.
Yeah, and even in like a lot of communist countries like Joseph Stalin in Soviet Union, they would actually kill mentally handicapped people. And they would kill people that had handicaps. They had people that were born with handicaps because they were considered less human. Yeah, they don't teach history in schools anymore. So,
they do.
A little bit. not the good version.
World War II, so.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the next one here. We got kind of sidetracked. I think this is called Archaeoraptor, I'm going to guess. This was actually found at the Gem Show in Tucson in 1999.
I have a feeling it's a fact.
By Steven Zirkus. And he was a guy who ran a small private museum in Utah. He bought this at Gem Show in Tucson, 1999, and it came out. National Geographic had this big press conference. I remember this when it happened in 1999. National Geographic came out. They held this press conference heralding this as a transitional form because it was supposed to be a hybrid dinosaur bird. And what the theory was that dinosaur and birds evolved from two separate ways. So they said that was a transitional form. In 1999, and National Geographic came out with a big, huge press conference. I remember this. This is not a Velociraptor. This is our Kaoraptor. Right. Well, yeah. Yeah. So they found this fossil, or the guy did at the gem show. Is it fact or faked?
It looks like a fact.
What do you guys think? Fact or faked? You're gonna love this one too. So what do you think? I'm giving you some hints as I'm doing this. So.
Yeah, it's fake.
All right, go ahead, show. It's fake.
How do you even give your hints?
All right. So here's why it's faked. So National Geographic, that prestigious scientific journal, basically had egg on its face later. Because what they...
Stephen Sergis.
Yeah, good going, guy. What they found out was Chinese farmers have grown really adept at gluing fossils together. Because they want to increase their black market value. And what this turned out to be was one of those. So what they did is they took a dinosaur fossil... I mean, a bird fossil and glued a dinosaur tail on it. That's what some Chinese farmer did. And they sold it. No, it was probably sold to somebody in China, and then it ended up somewhere at the gem show.
I see the dinosaur tail.
And that's the artist. That's what they even made it. This is what it supposedly looked like. They made that drawing of it. But get this. Now, because of that happened, Chinese scientists are re-examining other important fossils, and they're finding out that there's some devastating results because they already found another forgery. Because Nature published an article by a guy named Kevin Padian of the University of California at Berkeley on a petosaur with a tail. And it was found in the same fossil deposit as a Kaoraptor was found. And it turns out that the tail was attached by a local farmer before selling it to a Chinese museum. I don't know. Probably quite a bit, I would think, for Chinese farmer. Anything's a lot of money, I would think, for them. But here's the sad thing. This is the disgraceful thing. Again, I remember this. In the months that the fake dino/bird fossil, it was proudly displayed at National Geographic's Explorer Hall in Washington, D.C., and some 9 million school children filed by to see it, leaving with their imaginations filled with images of feathered dinosaurs that never existed. That's the disgrace. And like I said, I think this is another powerful reminder that scientists often see what they want to see, especially when it supports their theory of evolution, because they're so staunch in that. Pretty interesting, huh? I'm found here in Tucson, the gem show. Okay, this is a famous one. I remember this one when I was in school. Lucy.
This was a fact.
Now, you remember that one in school?
This is a fact.
Okay, you're saying fact. Okay.
I learned this when I was in biology. It is a fact.
Okay, you say fact. Okay, so let's look at this. Lucy is a partial fossilized skeleton about the size of a chimpanzee. They said it's a female, and it was discovered by Dr. Donald Johansson on November 30th, 1974 in Hadar, Ethiopia. It's got about 40% of the bones of the body have been recovered, and the age is estimated to be 3.2 million years. The find includes a V-shaped jaw, part of a hip, large bones, and assorted other bones with very little skull fragments. So that's what they found, basically right there, and they said it looked like that. So, fact or faked? Okay, so you say fact?
Yes.
Go ahead, it's a fake. This is why you need to, because that's what you're being taught in school. I was taught this in school on this one. It is found recently that Lucy had an anatomy ideally suited to climbing trees and was no different than any other apes or chimpanzees that we are familiar with. In fact, the French scientific journal Science Etve covered the story in 1909 under the headline, Adieu Lucy. If you don't know what adieu means, it means goodbye Lucy. One study performed in 2000 discovered a locking system in Lucy's forearms, enabling it to walk using the knuckles in the same way as modern day chimps. In the face of all these findings, many evolution experts declared that Lucy had not been a missing link. Okay, this is another one that was really big when I was in school. Ramapithecus. You guys have heard of this one? I did. I had 1950 textbooks.
It's classified.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. But they had a partial jawbone, is what they found, which as you see up there. And it was discovered by G.E. Lewis in India in the 1930s. And based on the two jawbone fragments, they claimed that it was 14 million years old. And evolutionist scientists reconstructed Ramapithecus's family and supposed natural habitat and what it looked like from a jawbone. That's what they said it looked like. And it was supposed to be the missing link. Is it fact or faked? It's faked. So why is it faked? Well, guess what? For 50 years, the fossil was portrayed as a missing link. But following the results of a 1981 anatomical comparison with a baboon skeleton, evolutionists were forced to set it quietly aside.
That must be why it was disclassified.
All right, I'm kind of running out of time. I'm gonna kind of go through these ones kind of quick here. How about this one? I was taught this in school.
It wasn't until college I found out it was fake.
Thanks, she just gave it away.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. So what they said, I know, what they said was that a human embryo went through the stages of evolution during development. This is gonna be probably in the late 1800s. These pictures were designed by German zoologist Ernst Haeckel. He was so passionate about his, defending evolution and prove it as a fact that he was nicknamed Darwin's bulldog on the continent and the Huxley of Germany. And what he did is he claimed that a developing human embryo moved through stages where it had fish-like characteristics, including gills, then amphibian characteristics like a tail, then it had mammal characteristics, and so on, retracing the Darwin evolutionary path. So we know that this one's faked, so just go through. So I was taught this in school, I remember this one. But this was finally brought out to be faked when Dr. Michael Richardson, an embryologist at St. George Michael School in London, found that there was no record that anyone actually checked Haeckel's claims by systematically comparing human and other fetuses during development. So Richardson assembled a scientific team and did just that, photographing the growing embryos of 39 different species. In a 1997 interview in the Times of London, Dr. Richardson stated, this is a quote from him, "This is one of the worst cases of scientific fraud. It is shocking to find that somebody once thought it was a great scientist was deliberately misleading. It makes me angry. What he, Haeckel, did was to take a human embryo and copy it, pretending that the salamander and the pig and all the others look the same at the same stage of development. They don't. These are fakes." Unquote. And it gets more here. At Jena, the university where Haeckel taught, he was charged with fraud by five professors and convicted by a university court. And again, shockingly, I wouldn't be surprised if they had these still in textbooks. They were in textbooks when I was in school. Okay, next one. This is a really cool one. The Taylor Trail. Have you ever heard of this one, Steve? See, nobody's heard about these things. Okay, this is a photo of the Paluxy River in Glen Rose, Texas. And this river runs through the famous Dinosaur Valley State Park because it's famous for its dinosaur tracks. But what's not known is that there are human tracks have also been found, not only in the same geological formation, but on the same bedding plane. And in some cases, these tracks overlap dinosaur tracks. They found a series of 14 sequential human footprints on the same platform with at least 134 dinosaur tracks. You guys want to see them? Yeah. Okay. So we're not going to go through fact or fake, but go to the fact one because it's a good slide. So it is a fact. I like the way they portrayed that there. So guy running. Okay, next slide. So there's Stan Taylor. He was the guy who began excavation of the Taylor Trail in 1969. And he continued working through 1972. Initially, only two tracks could be seen in the Paluxy Riverbed. Now, what happened was all this was covered in about 20 to 30 feet of mud and silt. And they had a flood. And it basically just washed all that mud and silt away and then you had this rock at the bottom that had these tracks in it, which is pretty cool. And that's why they were able to find the tracks. Go to the next slide. When they had a drought in 1999, you can see the detail here. You got the dinosaur tracks going that way, and you have the human footprints going that way. Yeah, he's one of the people working there. Yeah, it's solid rock. That's what I was going to tell you guys. This is like concrete now. It's not like mud where you can make tracks now. That's concrete. So we'll go to the next slide real quick, and we'll talk about that in a second here. So here's one of the tracks. The one on your left is what the track looks like, or used to look like, and I'll get into that. The middle one, you can see they kind of highlighted the outline of the human footprint. Does that look like a human footprint to you? You see like a toe and a big toe in that? And then the right one is highlighted the three-toed dinosaur track with the human footprint inside. They found 14 of these. Go to the next slide. So there's a guy putting his foot in one of the tracks. And you know, and one thing I noticed is look at his shin. I'm like, dude, man, is like archaeology really harsh or what? He's just skinned up really bad. But you can see he's putting his foot in one of the tracks. And then you can see the dinosaur, the three-toed dinosaur track there. Remember, this is like solid rock. So what happened, though, in 1989, Dr. Don Patton spoke at a creation conference in Dayton, Tennessee, and he had these photographs of all these footprints. Well, there were two evolutionists, prominent ones, in the audience, and they were upset from this presentation. So what did they do? This is what they found out later. These guys flew to Dallas, went immediately to the Pluxee River, and there was eyewitnesses' account that said that they were in the river that afternoon with an iron bar. 3 days before they were in the river, the footprint looked like what I just showed, the one that was on the left. And 3 days after these guys were in the river, this is what it looks like now. They destroyed it. Now, there's been some controversy in, of course, the scientific community about these tracks. But my logical thinking here is, well, if you have any doubts about it in the scientific community, why would you go destroy it? But they went and destroyed that one track, especially that one that was in the dinosaur track. So let's look at something here. Next slide. You got Grimm, right? Mother Goose and Grimm, although someday Grimmzilla will be extinct, his tracks will remain forever, and he's walking on the wet sidewalk, wet concrete sidewalk, making his tracks. Wow. So some people were like, well, couldn't human tracks be made later? And so that's a good question, right? Could they be made later? But think about this. Suppose you're walking with a friend and you see footprints on the sidewalk and your friend says, well, those were made later. Would you buy that? Would you buy that? No, why? Because concrete does what? What does cement do? Does it take like 20 million years to harden? Yeah. Right? I work in the cement industry. It takes like within hours the concrete's getting pretty hard. In fact, have you guys ever seen somebody pour a concrete slab and people wrote their initials in it?
I've seen that.
You have to do it when it's wet, because when it's dry. Right. Oh yeah, like at the Hollywood Walk of Fame. You know, they do it when it's wet, and once it hardens, you can't put any more footprints there, right? You can't write your name on that. And that's exactly what happened. What they said was that we know if tracks in mud don't last long, but what happened is it has to be rapidly solidified within days. Because we all know, you know, if someone's tracking somebody and it rains, it's like, well, we can't track them now because the rain pretty much washes away the tracks. Plus, you had all this material on top of the tracks. Like I said, the 20 to 30 feet of silt and mud that was preserving those tracks. This is like concrete. This is like solid rock where these tracks are. And that's why they were able to weather, through all those years, because they had that layer on top. Here's some of the things about the Taylor Trail. The fact that the sequence of 14 tracks is consistent in length and consistent in a left-right pattern, and each track demonstrates a general oblong human-like shape. The tracks are consistently 11 inches. My dad had a size 11 shoe. So basically this person had a size 11 shoe. Seven of the 14 tracks, you can see individual toes, and you can definitely see left and right distinctions made of 12 of the 14 tracks. They measured the distance between the tracks. It's 2.5 feet, which would mean that that person was probably 6 feet, 4 inches tall, because that's the average distance of steps or stride of somebody who is 6 feet, 4 inches tall. And here's the cool thing. The distance actually declines a little bit, because they found where the person was either running, or maybe he was jogging, and then he stopped. And he stood at one point, and then he took off again. So if you think about it, we just don't go and stop. He was probably running and then slowly came to a stop, stopped, and then started up again. We don't immediately run when we take off, right? I mean, you look at a sprinter in the Olympics, they don't immediately get their stride, right? So you can see that this person was jogging or running, stopped, and then started again. And when the tracks are dry, like I showed that picture in the drought, a person of average height can stride from print to print. And it was done on many occasions. And I'm going to go ahead and stop there. I had one more, but I'm going to go ahead and stop because we're over. So next week, we're going to look at something called transitional forms. That's what they're really looking for, is transitional forms. Missing link is like a transitional form. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And Steve is going to come up and talk about some things, too, about mutations, since you work in the oncology. So. All right, let's go ahead and pray and let you guys go. Father, I just thank you for this morning and opportunity, Lord, just to get to know you, get to know that when we look at the Bible, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. We know that that is true. It's not a theory. It is a fact. And Lord, we just thank you that you are God, that you loved us enough, that you would send your son to die for us. I pray that, Lord, that we just think about you during the week, that we would desire to have a relationship with you. And I just lift this up in your name, Lord Jesus. Amen.